Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Arsenal Way. And yes, we are back at you with your weekly podcast. I'm joined by Kaya Kainak from football.london to delve into everything Arsenal. Firstly, Kaya, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you, Bailey. Yeah, I've had a good week from an Arsenal perspective. It's hard to say it's been a bad week. Nothing's really happened. We'll talk about some injuries, which are a bit more concerning later in the show. But yeah, it's been good. I'm doing good. I'm very glad that football's back. I'm not a fan of the international break myself. I don't like the pauses in club football. And next month's going to be crazy. So 9 games in a whole month. So bring it on.
Yeah, it will be a crazy month. Just from a journalist's point of view, Kaya, how is it for a journalist during an international break? Someone who reports Arsenal. Where do you source news? How do you get certain content in?
Yeah, it's weird. As journalists, we're often complaining that we don't have enough time to dig into things. And then suddenly when we have loads of time, then you sort of like, oh, what do I dig into? So it's tough. You just sort of get on the phones, try and call around as many people as possible, try and see if there's anything going on. It's a good time for just sort of slightly more relaxed chats as well. Something that's, just anything that's a bit more sort of chilled out that people might not necessarily have time to talk about. But also, I mean, from the Arsenal perspective, I've been saying there's nothing going on. That's not totally true, because we had the women's game last week, which of course was fantastic. The record-breaking women's game sold out, sold 53,000 tickets at the Emirates Stadium, which was fantastic. So been spending a lot of time covering that and a little bit of time doing some academy stuff as well. So it's been nice to branch out away from the men's first team and go into other areas of the club as well.
Absolutely. And just keeping with the men's team and the international break, of course, we had a few players who went away with their nations and some players who didn't. But the players who did go away with their nations, I want to focus on England first. Okay, of course, Arsenal being an English team. And Bukayo Saka had one bad game and one phenomenal game. But it's better that he had this phenomenal game in the last fixture. So it leads him well for the upcoming Arsenal fixtures, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we saw with Bukayo Saka that he is now officially no longer a left-back or a left-wing-back. Not yeah. that really needed confirming, but Gareth Southgate played him there. I sympathise with why he did, because for some reason he didn't feel that Ben Chilwell was eligible to be called up to the squad. He's been playing for Chelsea, and I found that a bit of a strange one, that he was omitted from the squad altogether and that there wasn't another left-back he could have given a chance to, or maybe played Trippier at left-back or something. But he felt that playing Saka at left-wing-back was the way to go forward, and personally, I wasn't a fan of that decision, and I think we saw in the way that Saka plays, you don't want Saka tracking back and dealing with defensive runs in behind. And, you know, he struggled a little bit with that early on for the Italy game, and I don't think he was his best performance by his own admission. But to be fair, if you ask someone to play in a position where they've not played for nearly 2 years, just out of the blue, I think they're always going to struggle. So, yeah, I'm not surprised it didn't really work out. And then we saw, you know, when you put Bukayo Saka in his rightful right-wing position, he suddenly starts playing a lot better. And it was interesting. He had that chance where he was through one-on-one with Ter Stegen, couldn't quite finish it. But aside from that, had a pretty perfect cameo. And just that ball progression from deep, getting England from the halfway line to the edge of the opposition box. And there's not that many players in the England team that do that. They sometimes do it through passing or the occasional dribble like Bellingham. But there's a lot of safe passes in the England team. And you've got that. Having players who are good dribblers who can just break through lines when you haven't got the passers who can do it for you, that's key. And someone like a Bukayo Saka, he may well have earned himself a starting spot in the World Cup with that cameo, because I don't think Phil Foden was great this international break. And I think that's his main competition on the right side, because Sterling and Kane are always going to start. So, yeah, I think Saka's he's done himself no harm, especially with that cameo against Germany, where I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree with the ball carrying comment you made, because we don't play with England doesn't play with an attacking midfielder. So it's how do you get the ball from the midfield to the attack? And I think Bukayo Saka can provide that on the right hand side pretty perfectly. And as you said, he's an ideal candidate. I reckon he should be starting in the World Cup, but that'll be interesting to see. Another player who I reckon should be in the team personally, Kaya, is Ben White. He wasn't there. And I think his decision, maybe Southgate, wasn't justified with the way Harry Maguire did play against Germany and Italy, and Connor Cody didn't even get on the pitch either.
I thought Maguire was all right against Italy. Against Germany, first half, fine. Second half, we saw the issues that's been plaguing him this whole time. And personally, I don't have that much of an issue with Maguire playing on the left side of a back three in principle. I think it can work. I think he's a decent ball progressor. I don't think he's the best England have by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he's decent at bringing the ball out from defence, and he did it quite well in the World Cup a few years ago, the one in Russia. And, you know, back then he was sort of the darling of the England fans. It seems weird to think, but he was one of the most popular players, and he was in that chant about England are in Russia. And, you know, I just think it's not really worked out for him, and I think his confidence is on the floor. And you get to the point where it's maybe cruel to be kind. You have to take him out of the firing line. I personally think if you were going to do that, and everyone knew this was going to be an issue with Maguire going into this international break. Everyone knew his confidence was on the floor. Everyone knew that he had a rick in him. And if you're going to go into a World Cup knowing that, and now you sort of, I think Southgate sort of penned himself into a corner where he can't really drop Harry Maguire because it's so late in the day. So I think the issue now is sort of, if you were going to try someone else, you kind of had to do it now. And, you know, from an Arsenal perspective, we, of course, all think it should have been Ben White. And I'm, you know, someone who definitely still thinks that. I think Ben White can do that job on the left side as well as he does it on the right because he's so good on the ball. He's relatively two-footed, excellent passer, excellent dribbler. And I think as England try to get themselves further up the pitch, I think Ben White's the kind of player who can do that for them. You know, if you're not going to go for Ben White, though, give Mark Gahey a go. Give Fikayo Tomori a go. Give one of those centre-backs you called up at least a couple of minutes. But Southgate didn't do that. And I think we've quite clearly seen what his team for the World Cup is going to be, barring, you know, a couple of questionable selections with the goalkeeper. We could talk about Ramsdale as well, maybe in a bit. But yeah, I think Ben White should have been in the squad. I think not picking him in the squad, particularly if you're going to play a back three, someone who can play literally anywhere across the back line, I think that's bizarre. And I think, you know, the hope now, England go into a tournament hoping that Harry Maguire won't have a rick in him in a big game. And that's not really a risk you want to have if you're targeting winning a tournament, which is what England are doing realistically. Whereas with Ben White, obviously, you know, you can't eliminate risk entirely, but you can go in with a player who's filled with confidence, playing for a team that are top of the Premier League and a team who are playing in a system that does, you know, despite not being a back three, does share a lot of some tactical similarities with what Southgate's trying to do. But that's his decision. And, you know, I'm not the England manager. Wish I was. But yeah, that's what he's gone for. And I wouldn't have done it myself. And we'll see what happens in Qatar.
Yeah, I think the same situation with Harry Maguire is all around the pitch, to be honest. Declan Rice, for example, if he pulls up with an injury, who comes in to replace him? Maybe Calvin Phillips, but he hasn't really played. Harry Kane, we're so reliant on Harry Kane. Even Tony or Tammy Abraham did not get a single minute. So if Harry Kane gets injured suddenly, even Tony or Tammy Abraham are going to have to step up when they haven't really had any minutes for the international side. So it's a risky call by Southgate, but it's interesting to see. But just going back to the Arsenal players for England, you mentioned the Aaron Ramsdale, Kaya. It's disappointing for him because, again, in the summer international break, of course, he started against Hungary. It's almost like Southgate has completely lost trust in him. And now Nick Pope has come to take the number two shirt for England.
Yeah, I wonder if he obviously started that 4-0 defeat that you mentioned there. And I wonder if that played against him in the sense that Southgate was looking at that and thought, I wonder what the issues are from that game, and blamed Ramsdale for it. I don't think he could have done a lot for the goals. I think of some of the counter-attacking goals where his sweeping was maybe not as good as it has been sometimes for Arsenal, but I think it's harsh to blame him. And personally, I thought going into this international break, Ramsdale was the obvious number two with Pope at number three, and then Henderson sort of battling Pope for that third spot in the squad. And I thought we would see Ramsdale get 190 minutes and then maybe Pope and Henderson share a game or something like that. To play Pope for the 180 minutes, to me, makes no sense whatsoever. I think you're basically hamstringing yourself in the sense that you have two decent goalkeepers, Ramsdale and Pickford. And, you know, I think as Arsenal fans, we'd all quite clearly say that we think Ramsdale's a better goalkeeper. But when it comes to an England shirt, Jordan Pickford is generally very good. He was outstanding in the Euros. You know, he saved some penalties in the final as well. And, you know, I would understand. I wouldn't like it, but I'd understand why Southgate would want to stick with him, assuming he's fully fit for the World Cup. But now you've got yourself in the position where you don't know what Pickford's fitness is going to be like, and you're now playing a goalkeeper whose last notable action in an England shirt was to basically chuck a ball into the net and give it to Kai Havertz to equalise what would have been and ruin what would have been, you know, a pretty, you know, good win for England, especially in terms of momentum and all that kind of stuff. So, listen, it's what Southgate's gone for. He claims to want to be a manager who likes to see his team build from the back. If you're going to do that, then why pick the goalkeeper who played for Burnley last season, the team who played from the back the least, the team who had the ball in the air the most, if I'm not mistaken, the most long kicks from the back, and you go from a team who are top in the league in Arsenal, who have a goalkeeper who is English, who is young, and who is very good with his feet, and you choose to ignore him. I do wonder if you know, if this wasn't an Arsenal podcast, and this may be a national podcast, and maybe they'd be talking so sort of vehemently in favour of Ramsdale. I think, you know, I speak to friends who aren't Arsenal fans and they tell me they're not fully convinced by him. You know, I get that a little bit. But when it comes to Ramsdale v Pope, I think by not playing, weirdly, Ramsdale's kind of won that debate over this international break. But I'd have liked to see them given at least one start because I think not playing him at all was the wrong thing to do. And I think having him as the third choice goalkeeper going into the World Cup is ridiculous, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Nick Pope was chosen ahead of Ramsdale due to his shot stopping, and against Germany, he did not show that, and that has completely debunked. I think the debate really, and Ramsdale really should be the number two in my opinion. But looking at your face value, Kaya, you could call it a bad international break for Ramsdale and Ben White, but in reality, it actually could be a blessing in disguise for both. Firstly, Nick Pope made a mistake, so Ramsdale can get back in. Of course, Harry Maguire made a mistake. John Stones pulled up injured. So that's motivation for Ben White and Ramsdale. It's also a blessing in disguise for Arsenal because this could increase the hunger for the two players, couldn't it, going into the World Cup for the last month or so?
It could, yeah. It could, for sure. I think Ben White was quite upset about not being in this World Cup squad. And, you know, there's rumours about him being injured and that being a reason he was left out. They didn't turn out to be true. And I do wonder if that was sort of maybe people from his camp trying to put some information out there to sort of style it out, I guess, the fact that he'd been left out of the England squad, and to try and soften that blow and try and not make it seem like defenders like Connor Cody were ahead of him in the pecking order, which I think is bizarre. But yeah, I think if John Stones' injury, if John Stones' injury is going to keep him out of the World Cup, then surely you'd think Ben White is next in line to get in the squad. He's showing the favouritism for Tyrone Mings, who hasn't made the squad, but Mings isn't really playing for Villa, so surely Ben White would be next in line. But, you know, with Southgate, who knows? But yeah, I agree. There's a bit of extra motivation for those Arsenal players, for sure. And every player wants to go to the World Cup and play for their country. You know, growing up, that is a player's dream. No matter where you're from in the world, that is a dream. So if they get to do that and they get to travel to Qatar with the England squad, then fantastic.
Absolutely. Okay, enough of international break talk, Kaya. Let's talk about Arsenal and the months ahead, especially the North London derby. But before we do that, I'm going to connect the England to the North London derby. And that's Emil Smith Rowe. Now, of course, today, as we're speaking on Thursday, it came out that Smith Rowe is set to have surgery on his injury. That is not great news, is it, Kyle?
No, it's a shame for him. He's not really got going this season. He obviously has had those groin problems that kept him out for much of pre-season, that has kept him out for much of the start of this season. And I think the decision's just been taken instead of trying to soldier on and try and get through it. Arsenal have taken the decision, you know what, let's act now. Let's have the surgery and let's hopefully get him fully fit for the start of football when it comes back after the World Cup, because he's going to be out to at least to the start of December. That's when he'll be aiming to come back upon me into training. And I think Arsenal are planning a warm weather training camp, which we put our report on the site, potentially in Dubai. So, you know, hopefully getting back warmed up in Dubai and then ready to go again by the time Boxing Day comes around and the Premier League restarts again. That would seem to make sense. You just don't know with a player like Emil Smith Rowe. He has had injury problems before. He had a hip injury that kept him out for a year. He's had some hamstring problems. He's had various muscle problems as his body sort of develops to the rigours of playing week in, week out. And it derailed his season last season. And it was this groin issue that sort of has been hampering him for quite a while. He still did quite well for a guy who was injured. You know, he's still coming off the bench and scoring goals and scoring when he started. But yeah, it's a shame because he's such a talented player. And I think people are forgetting that. And I saw when I put out the news about Smith Rowe, and I saw a lot of people saying, you know, get rid. He's, you know, we need to move on. I don't buy that at all. And I think, you know, people need to just put the brakes on a bit with that criticism, because Emil Smith Rowe is a supremely talented player. And just because Gabriel Martinelli is playing well at the minute, I don't think we should use that as a stick to beat Smith Rowe with, because I think Smith Rowe has a lot to contribute to this Arsenal squad when he's fully fit. But there's no point having him around the place half fit. You'd rather have a fully fit Emil Smith Rowe, or as close to a fully fit Emil Smith Rowe as possible. And then you go from there. For me, it doesn't make any sense to have him in this sort of will he, won't he every single game. And he's pushing himself and he's causing himself more problems. I mean, after that Man U game, he only played 20 minutes and then he pulled up in the cool down. That's not good. That shouldn't really be happening. So I think it's sensible to try and just get to the bottom of the issue, have the surgery, hopefully fully recover, and give him a bit of time to rest. Just give him a bit of time away from it all, get time to build his confidence back up, and then hopefully he'll be ready to come back and make an impact, because he's a very good player. And I'm hoping that people don't forget that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes for Arsenal fans, the stardom of Bukayo Saka sometimes puts too much pressure on Emil Smith Rowe. I think a young player is expected to have setbacks. Gabriel Martinelli himself, the 1920-2021 season, he was suffering with injuries, constantly out of the team. And now it's Smith Rowe's time to go through that. I'm sure he'll be back and better and much stronger. But just with Smith Rowe out, Kaya, how do Arsenal address the left midfield position? Who goes there? Who would be your preferred pick?
Well, I mean, it's Martinelli is the first choice for sure. But there is definitely a question beyond that in terms of how they deal with it as a backup, because Martinelli played that Europa League game against Zurich when Smith Rowe wasn't fit for that. He can't play every game. So who's going to play? Marquinhos is very talented and is the backup to Bukayo Saka. But, you know, having loaned out Nicola Pepe, the depth in those wing positions isn't great. You know, you take away a couple of players from that, you get a suspension to Jesus, you get an injury to someone else, and you know, before you know it, you're really struggling for depth in those positions. There's a few exciting young wingers and, you know, a few players in the 21s who might be thinking, you know, this is my chance to make a step up. I guess Zinchenko can play there if you need, and Fabio Vieira can play anywhere, so he could be an option. But yeah, it's an issue now, I think, that depth, especially because there's 9 games in October and Martinelli can't play them all. So you're going to be looking at playing those first team players in Europa League games, which is not something anyone really wanted to see in an ideal world. But yeah, it becomes trickier now. Maybe we'll see Arsenal, you know, change formation in Europa League. Maybe they'll play some back fives that require less forwards just to get through and try and make the best of what they have available to them, and chances to give Martinelli a rest, because he has played every single game this season, Martinelli, when he's been available for every single one. He's played every single one. And I think there is an issue. I was thinking it sort of as I was talking about Smith Rowe being out and saying it's great for him to rest, but for the rest of the squad, there's problems there because Arsenal do need him. Eddie, of course, can play on the wing, but yeah, they've loaned out the depth they had in those weak positions. Of course, I've forgotten about Reece Nelson as well, who is back. Yes. So he's an option. And I guess maybe he'll play in some of those games. But whether Arsenal want to be relying on Reece Nelson if there's an injury to Martinelli, that's another question. And we'll have to see what happens on that front.
Yeah, bringing Reece Nelson into the Premier League will be a big risk for sure. I'm a bit worried about that, but hopefully Gabriel Martinelli can maintain his fitness, because he will be a crucial piece going into the World Cup break. But another crucial piece, Kaya, and I believe you reported yesterday that Arsenal are hopeful that Thomas Partey will be fit for the North London derby. Do you just want to give us an update on how he is and how likely it is he could be in the team for Saturday?
Sure, yeah. The latest we've heard is that, you know, what I put out yesterday was that Arsenal were sort of hopeful, like you say, that he'll be ready. He's being assessed at London Colney today and tomorrow ahead of the game. I'm sure Mikel Arteta will say something along the lines of, we'll have to wait and see in this press conference, because that's what he does when it comes to injuries. But yeah, what I've heard is Arsenal are hopeful. They couldn't confirm it. You know, the people I was speaking to couldn't confirm it for certain. And, you know, I'd like to think that if Partey is close to fitness, he would play in the North London derby, because it's such an important game. But then again, we all remember that North London derby where he clearly wasn't fully fit, came back and had to limp off halfway through, and Harry Kane went on and scored on a counter-attack. So I don't know. We'll see with Thomas Partey. I hope he's fully fit, because I think Arsenal need a player like him at the base of their midfield. And, you know, I don't think there's that obvious a backup, especially with Elneny out injured. So we'll see. I like Sambi in the six. I think in these big games, you need someone with a bit more experience, a bit more defensive now. So maybe Sambi has a tendency to switch off in some moments. So just not be aware of where he is on the pitch, which I think will come. If you look at that the second goal Arsenal conceded against Man United, when Sambi was playing and he plays a pass in the area of the pitch where, you know, I think if he's playing as an eight and he's got a six behind him, he can get away with it. But playing as sort of the last line of midfield defence, if you like, you can't really get away with it. So Arsenal will want Partey back. As I said, they're hopeful he'll be back. And I think every Arsenal fan will be sharing that hope too.
Absolutely. And Martin Odegaard, of course, played both games for Norway. That's a positive. He's almost confirmed, isn't he, for the North London derby. I think before the Brentford game, it would have been worrying that he's not fit. But with Fabio Vieira on form, it's less of a burden if Odegaard wasn't playing. But it's still good to have the captain, of course, for the biggest derby of the season.
Spot on, yeah. Vieira really impressed everyone in that Brentford game. I thought it was very good. And that's the kind of sign you want Arsenal to make. Let's look at the number six position again, for example. It's clear that Arsenal do probably need to get some sort of backup in there. You don't want them to go out and get a backup who is definitely going to be second choice to Partey. You don't, which is, you know, my personally, I had some issues with the Douglas Luiz transfer, because I think that would have been an issue where, you know, he comes in, but it's a step down. Fabio Vieira, it's not a step up. It's not really a step down. It's sort of a step sideways, in the sense that he's a very different player to Martin Odegaard. a lot more direct, as I think you said last week when we were doing a pod on this. But I think him coming in and performing so well is, you know, testament to that transfer policy that Arsenal put in the summer, where they were clear where they wanted to strengthen, and they did it pretty well. So, yeah, obviously it looks like Odegaard's going to be fit, and that's a positive for Arsenal. But Fabio Vieira is a very good player, and fingers crossed he'll be able to have an impact on those first ever North London derby as well.
Absolutely. And Tomiyasu, he got sent home from international duty. How is he? How is he doing? Will he be available? Will he be fit for Spurs, do you reckon?
Again, it's a hopeful he'll be fit, but I don't think he'd start anyway. Personally, I think Ben White would start the match. So, yeah, they'll be hopeful to have him in the squad. And, you know, last season, he in the home derby, at least, he largely pocketed Heung-Min Son. So I think they'll be hoping that if he is fit and he does play, that he'll be able to do something similar. But I think it'll be Ben White starting at that game regardless.
Yeah, I do agree. You mentioned Heung-Min Son. Let's transition over to Tottenham, Kaya. They are also a team of injury issues. Now, Dejan Kulusevski, he's reportedly injured. How much of a big miss would that be for Tottenham going into this match?
Yeah, our colleague on the Spurs side of things, Ali Gold, was reporting that today, that Kulusevski's a doubt for the Spurs-Arsenal game this Saturday. And yeah, I don't know, in answer to your question, how big a doubt he'd be. I think Spurs have three very good finishers of attacks in Richarlison, Son and Kane. But when it comes to that facilitation, they don't really have someone who's a backup, an obvious backup at least, to Dejan Kulusevski. He's kind of unique. And I know he's been dropped in a couple of games this season. It's been very harsh on him. But he's kind of unique in the sense that he's a real creator for Spurs. And they don't have that many creators in their team. If you look at their midfield, Bentancur, Bissouma, Højbjerg, they're a little bit, I guess, functional, let's say. And they're not necessarily the most creative, and I don't think they're going to try and break down Arsenal. But to be fair, I don't think that's the type of game that Spurs are going to play. I think they're going to play on the counter. I think they're going to sit deep and let Arsenal come onto them, and that will, you know, create spaces in behind, and then maybe they'll deal with that. I think, to be fair, Richarlison is the kind of player who would probably thrive in a derby. I think he'd absolutely love it. I think he'd love winding up the Arsenal fans. And we saw this in the Merseyside derby. And I think he'd absolutely love it. So maybe Conte will be tempted to go for him anyway, even if Kulusevski is fit. But for me, I think Kulusevski is a really underrated member of that Spurs attacking trident. I think he's a very good player. And I'd love for Arsenal to have a player like him in their squad, because I think he would be a fantastic addition. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with him.
Yeah, I can already imagine Richarlison being public enemy number one for Arsenal fans. I just know he's cool. Somehow I know the fans in the game, but it'll be interesting to see. I know you've got a piece coming out around 7 p.m, Kaya, on the Kulusevski and how it could impact Sinchenko and Tierney's Sinchenko and Tierney. I know people who are watching this can view that piece by the time this video does come out. Just do you think that will impact Tierney or Sinchenko starting the game? Would you rather start Tierney if Kulusevski was playing, but Sinchenko if he wasn't playing?
I don't want to give away the whole piece, man. But, I'm joking. Yes, I think, to be honest, I think the fact that it's a home North London derby means that Arsenal are going to play the more attacking option anyway, which is, in my mind, means playing Oleksandr Zinchenko, because Arsenal are going to need to control the possession. They're going to try and strangle Spurs. They're going to try and keep the pressure on for the whole game. And the best way to do that is by having a player like Zinchenko, who's so good on the ball, assuming he is obviously fit and available because he had a calf problem that kept him out of Ukraine's duty over the international break. Tierney's different, and Tierney will be available, by the way. He suffered a head injury, and that was precautionary why he was brought home, assuming, you know, he's not picked up anything fresh in Arsenal training, which seems to be taking sort of a lot of players out of things at the minute. It seems to be causing a lot of injuries in the training sessions. But I think they offer very different things, and I think there's a convincing argument for both to be played in this game, in the sense that if you want to try and defend yourself against the counter of Son, Kane, Kulusevski, Richarlison, whoever plays, then having Tierney makes more sense, because he's the more defensively solid left back. And if you want to sort of lock up the back door, if you like, Tierney makes more sense. But if you want to go out and attack and you want to cause Spurs problems, you want to be the more dominant team and you want to play the way you want to play, then Zinchenko is the pick. So I would be surprised if Tierney does start the game, assuming Zinchenko's fit. So yeah, I don't think it will impact things too much, but I think it could. And I think, you know, Arsenal will... Mikel Arteta has already said several times that he does sort of tweak his selection slightly, or he does tweak what he's doing a little bit based on what the opposition is doing, as any manager really should. But at the same time, the most important thing for him is how his team plays. And I think Zinchenko offers him the best chance to play the way he wants to play the football.
Yeah, I completely agree as well. With the game being at Emirates, I think Arsenal are going to be on the front foot. So it gives us the of course, the ability to start Zinchenko. So that will definitely be one to watch. Another battle to watch, Kaya, is Heung-min Song potentially first Ben White. Now, I know you mentioned Tomiyasu did pocket Heung-min Song. However, toward the last game, it was Son first, Rob Holding. And we all know the outcome. Rob Holding was sent off within the first half. What are the worries if playing another centre-back against Heung-min Song? Will Conte look to target Son and Ben White and think, look, we can get the same success here as we did in the previous game?
He can try. I think if he's got any ideas about trying to target Ben White, he should probably look at the first game of the season where Wilfried Zaha tried to do the same thing and found it very difficult. I gave Ben White a poor rating that day and I regret it because I've watched the game back and I thought it was fantastic. He's proven that he's very good at dealing with 1v1 defenders. He's unusually for a centre-back not afraid to defend in those wide spaces, and some will drift infield anyway. And assuming he does drift infield, then he's got William Saliba to deal with. And if he tries to switch sides, then he's got Gabriel to deal with. So this strength and depth that Arsenal have at the back, these physically imposing but also very quick and very technical centre-backs that Arsenal have, do mean that they're well-equipped to deal with players like Son. You know, players like Kane are very difficult to defend against at the best of times just because they're so clinical, and if you give them half a yard, they take those chances. Son is similar, but Son's game is a bit more big spaces, prefers to run into big spaces, prefers to take advantage of them that way. And if that's how they choose to play, then Ben White, I'd like to think, he's quicker than anyone gives him credit for. I'd like to think that he'll be well placed to deal with that. And I think it will be a difficult game, but I don't think it's one that Ben White can't handle. And, you know, he's got that extra motivation that we were speaking about before after being left out of the England squad. Go deal with one of the best defenders, best attackers, sorry, in the Premier League. And then you prove to yourself, and you proved hopefully to Gareth Southgate as well, why you should be in that group for World Cup in Qatar.
Absolutely, yeah. Sorry, the mobility of Ben White definitely is always just crucial. Rob Holding lacks that, and I don't think Son will have the same success. So I'm definitely with you on that one. Let's talk about William Saliba, Kaya, because of course he's come up against Mitrovic earlier in the season. But with Harry Kane, is this the first, let's say, well-known world household striker that Saliba is going to come up against? And is this a major test for him? If he does pass the test, what does this say for him and his future going forward?
I mean, yeah, he dealt pretty well with Cristiano Ronaldo when he came on, but he's a fading force, I guess. Rashford did get in behind him a couple of times. I don't think we'll see Kane doing that. So, yeah, this is, I guess, the highest profile striker he's dealt with. Probably, I mean, arguably the best centre forward in the world, depending on what your thoughts on Lewandowski and all those kind of guys are. Haaland, of course, as well. But Kane is a unique challenge, and Saliba's risen to every challenge he's faced so far this season. I've got no reason to think that he wouldn't be able to rise to this next one as well. I just think he's so good. I really, really like William Saliba. I really hope Arsenal get that contract tied down soon. And yeah, he's a very impressive defender. He's got all the tools in his arsenal, no pun intended, to deal with a striker like Harry Kane. You know, Kane's great at movement. Saliba's great at reading the game. Kane's not the quickest in the world. Saliba is. Physically, Kane might try and back into him and bully him like we've seen him do with centre-backs in the past for Arsenal. I think Saliba can deal with that. So, yeah, you'd like to think Saliba will be able to take on Harry Kane, but Kane's got a record in the derbies that means you can't rule him out and gets a lot of penalties as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens indeed. And let's talk about Arsenal on the attack now, because I think that would be the more regular theme in the game. And let's talk about Gabriel Jesus, Kyle, because it works in perfectly, as we're just talking about Harry Kane. I think this is a good chance for Gabriel Jesus to really stamp himself as a top Premier League striker. I think people sometimes forget about Gabriel Jesus to talk about Harry Kane, of course, Erling Haaland. I remember, this sticks with me, Phil Foden's interview when he said we didn't have a striker in the team, now we've got Erling Haaland. I think that was a disrespect to Gabriel Jesus, low-key. But with Gabriel Jesus, let's say he outscores Harry Kane, he can really make a statement, can't he, as an Arsenal player and a top six striker, possibly.
Yeah, he could. I think he's established his credentials as a top six striker for sure in these first few games. And anyone who doesn't think he is after having watched him in the start of the season is, you know, looking at it with probably, you know, Spurs-tinted spectacles on this game. I think that's what's going on there. But yeah, Gabriel Jesus is a fantastic player. And I think he has the skill set to cause the Spurs back line a lot of problems. You look at Eric Dier and Ben Davies in particular, not the most mobile of defenders, don't particularly like being pressed, don't particularly like strikers who buzz around and don't really stay in one position. that can cause Spurs a lot of problems. And Jesus is a player who turns up in big games. He has a great record for City against Liverpool and against Chelsea. And, you know, he played pretty well against United as well. I think he was very unlucky not to get a goal in that game. So, you know, yes, in answer to your question, I think this is the perfect time for him to step up and shine and prove that he is one of the best strikers in the Premier League. And he can sort of mix it with the big boys, if you like, to use a real football cliche. But I think, yeah, Jesus is his time. And I really hope he takes the opportunity. And he doesn't strike me as a guy who's afraid of the big occasions. He strikes me as a guy who tends to thrive in them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do agree with you. And just as with the game overall, if Arsenal do come out victorious, Kyle, how significant is it? When do we actually consider ourselves as title challengers? Is it when we beat Tottenham or is it when we beat Liverpool the week after?
Worried you were going to say those words, title challengers. I was worried you were going to say that. I don't think Arsenal need to worry about title challenges or anything like that, especially at this stage of the season where they've not even played 10 games. If they beat Liverpool, if they beat Spurs, superb. Everyone will be delighted and rightly so. And, you know, you can start to take this team seriously. But I don't think there's any point in putting the extra pressure of a title race on this Arsenal team. Their goal this season is to come in the top four, and their goal is to try and win the Europa League as well. Beyond that, I don't think they're too fussy. I think they're just happy to do as well as they can and finish as high as possible. But title isn't really in the remit. I think teams like City are just a bit too consistent for Arsenal. And to be fair, Arsenal have been very consistent all season. But when it comes down to it, we spoke about the lack of depth now that Smith Rowe is injured. You get a couple of injuries elsewhere, and this Arsenal team does start to struggle just a bit. They're just not quite on par with City when it comes to the squad depth, which is fine because I don't think anyone's saying they should be. Arsenal's priority right now is get back in the Champions League, whatever way you do it, if that's winning the Europa League or if it's coming in the top four, ideally both. The league title is something that's not really in their minds. I know they're top of the league, but they've had that fortunate start to the season in terms of fixture lists. And yeah, you know, I don't think it's worth putting that extra pressure on this young Arsenal team because they should just be enjoying themselves and they should be just enjoying the fact they're playing so well and trying to make it carry on for as long as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's right not to skip a step. I think the next step is Champions League, and then we can look to approach that, because if you do skip a step, sometimes you do fall down. So let's focus. I think we should focus on Champions League completely. The title talk is very early as well. We're 7 games in, but the question has to be posed because a lot of people are talking about it. But hopefully Arsenal can keep making fans talk about that. Talk about those title challenges. That means Arsenal are on the right path and are still around the top of the league. But we shall see. But I'm going to take a negative twist and Arsenal lose on Saturday. Now, we've already lost to Manchester United, losing to Tottenham, another top six team. How detrimental could that be to Arsenal?
Losing to Spurs, yeah, it could be, but obviously losing any home derby is always detrimental. I think, you know, it's maybe not answering your question directly, but it's how they lose is quite important. So if they lose, dominate in the game and then lose to a couple of Spurs counter-attacks, which is what Spurs are capable of doing. We saw that in that. The game that I think is probably going to be most comparable to this one is when Spurs went to the Etihad last season and somehow won 3-2 despite City equalising in the 92nd minute, which was really upsetting. And if you look back on it now, those 2 points that Spurs were able to get, that was enough to get them into the top four. Arsenal only missed out on the top four by 2 points. So if Man City had done the decent thing and beaten Tottenham like they were supposed to, Arsenal would have been in the Champions League right now. But it's about some maybes and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it would be bad in the sense that everyone would be a bit upset. But if Arsenal play the way they've been playing and they play well, I think most fans are now on board enough with the project that is going on at the Emirates to see that there is clear progression and that Arsenal will turn up against Liverpool and they'll play the same way and hopefully win that game as well. So, yeah, I think it would be potentially bad. And I think it would give fuel to all those critics who say, oh, Arsenal are flat-track bullies. They're not beating any big teams and all that kind of stuff. And you know what? Arsenal would have to take that because that would be the case. And, you know, that's undeniable. But at the same time, I do think beating Spurs and beating a team who, for some reason, you know, I can say this a bit more freely now. I'm on an Arsenal podcast. I've been on some other podcasts today. But I don't fully get why teams, why a lot of pundits are, I guess, assuming it or taking it as read that Spurs are going to finish in the top four. I know they're a good side. I know they've got a decent amount of depth, but I've not seen much from them in these first few games to suggest that they're nailed on in a way that Arsenal aren't. So I think it'd be fantastic to beat Spurs and prove against a team that every pundit seems to think will definitely finish inside the top four. that they're capable of achieving, you know, results against good sides.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I can't think of a convincing Tottenham win. Maybe the Southampton game early in the season. But except for that, I can't think of a game where I thought, okay, they've blown the opposite team away. Whereas for Arsenal, we have done that. You could argue the fixtures have been easier, but the Premier League is not an easy league.
For Spurs, their fixtures has actually been lower than Arsenal's, based on when they've played teams in the season. So, you know, that's something to consider.
There you go. That confirms it. Let's see, Kaya, where Arsenal win, where do they win this game? And potentially, where could they lose the game? What important part of the pitch?
Yeah, if they lose it, it's going to be on the counter-attack, isn't it? I think that's what Spurs do. That's how they cause Arsenal problems. That's how they cause all big teams problems. And the worst thing for Arsenal would be to go a goal down, because that would play right into Spurs' hands, and you know they'd be forced to attack for the whole game and basically spend the whole game in Spurs' half. And Spurs want that, because then they can run into the spaces that vacate. So for me, this game is all about the first goal. It's all about Arsenal hopefully getting in front and then Spurs having to come out and come onto them. And you know, if they can do that and they can start fast and get a goal nice and early, then Spurs will have to react. And I don't know if Spurs have the midfield capacity to be able to break Arsenal down. So, yeah, I think that first goal is where the game will be won and lost. I think it's going to be essential. I'm not saying that if Arsenal fall behind, it's a done deal. But I do think that Spurs are very good at defending leads, particularly in big games. And even when they do sort of get paid back, they seem to be able to go again. So I think that will be the big sort of moment in the game. Whoever gets that first goal, and obviously we all hope it will be Arsenal, but I think that's going to be a big, big moment.
Yeah, it will be. I think that I do agree. The first goal will be pivotal. And it has been like in North London derbies, usually the first team to score usually do go on to get the better result. But we shall see. Kyle, I think Arsenal need a new North London derby hero, because I think of the 18-19 season, Aubameyang, of course, scored that wonder goal to make it 3-2 in 2019-20. Once again, Aubameyang equalised to make it 2-2. 2021, Aubameyang again scored at the Emirates to give Arsenal the lead, and they've done that famous celebration. So who can come in and step in and be the new Arsenal hero in the North London derby at the Emirates?
I think we'd love a game like that first one you talked about, where Arsenal came from 2-1 down to win 4-2. I think that'd be superb if we get a game like that. I don't think Antonio Conte's sides really lend themselves to a game like that, but it'd be lovely if they could. Who will be the new hero? Gabriel Jesus is the obvious choice, isn't it? It's hard to look too far beyond him, because if he gets a couple of goals in the derby, he will be a god among the Arsenal. Jesus will become a god among the Arsenal fans. There you go. There's your headline for Sunday's paper. But I think he will just go to another level. He'll be stratospheric in terms of the Arsenal fans, who already love him, but they will love him even more. And yeah, it will be amazing if Jesus can really prove himself on the big stage. Beyond that, you're looking at obviously Martinelli and Saka, but North London derby. Saka's got a decent record in derbies, actually. Scored last time, plays pretty well in them. Was probably, I think, man of the match in that North London derby that Arsenal lost in May last year, and last season even. So yeah, Saka, Martinelli, Odegaard, all those kind of guys. I'd love for Granit Xhaka to do something in the derby. That'd be amazing. But yeah, Gabriel Jesus is the standout for me.
Yes, Jesus will become a god indeed. Hopefully that is the case. But before we do, Kaya, I'm going to get your score prediction, as we do in every podcast. How are you feeling for the North London derby? Optimistic?
As we do in every podcast, I'm going to moan about the fact that I have to do this score prediction, because I hate doing them. This is probably, I think, the hardest game I've had to call in a really long time. Because as I said, that first goal is so important. And whoever gets it, as you said, tends to go on to win the game. So if Arsenal go behind, then I think Spurs will unfortunately go on to win, or at least get a draw. And if Arsenal go in front, I do think they'll hold on to win. So I'm going to err on the side of optimism. I'm going to say 2-1 to Arsenal, because that's what I said when I was on other podcasts earlier. I'm going to try and be consistent. And hopefully Arsenal can do one over Spurs, because I think this is, as we said already, the kind of opportunity they need to establish themselves and to get people to take them seriously. Not that that really matters inside the club, and not that that really matters among the fan base, because I think 95% of people have woken up to the fact that this Arsenal team is actually very good. But there's people outside the club who aren't on board with that, and a 2-1 victory would really offer them the chance to do it.
Yeah, I do agree. One, just like the Brentford game, Kai, I'm going to copy your score. I'm going to go over 2-1 as
no,
well.
No.
I promise
no.
I have my own predictions, guys.
No. You're not nicking my score. You got to go for your own one. I'm not having this. This happened against Brentford. I'm not having it again.
I can't. I'm sorry. I'm asking you first. I went first. I'd say 2-1. But okay, look, I'll give a clean sheet again to the boys, to the Gunners. I'll make it a 2-0 win. I'll do that. I think Ramsdale.
Really confident, everyone.
I'm confident.
Quote that.
Not in my decision, but I'm right. Send
it back your way. When Harry Kane gets his penalty, I'm going to send it your way, saying you jinxed us.
Ramsdale will save the penalty. I have faith.
There you go. That's the confidence we need.
No, I'm joking. But yeah, I'll go for a 2-0 Arsenal win, a Gabby Jesus goal and a Bukayo Saka goal as well. Let's go for that. Hopefully, we are right, Kai. I think 3 points is all that matters in the North London derby. So let's take that. Before we do end the show, do you just want to plug anything you do have coming out in the near future?
Yeah, you spoke already about that piece to do with the left-back situation. So that's coming out later this evening. And then tomorrow it's just press conference stuff. Press conference is at 1 o'clock. We'll have live coverage of all the build-up to that from 12. Obviously, all the live quotes as they come out from Mikel Arteta ahead of the game, where we'll be expecting some team news updates. We'll be expecting some, maybe even a little jibe at Antonio Conte after some of the stuff he said last time. All that kind of stuff I think will be interesting. And yeah, then predicted lineups, live coverage of the game from, I think we start at 8:30 on Saturday. So we're building up a long way in advance. So yeah, feel free to join us as Bailey, myself and Tom Canton, who's gone his way back. He'll be making his special return for the North London Derby. And yeah, feel free to join us all as we're giving you coverage of that, which is going to be hopefully a fantastic weekend for Arsenal.
Absolutely. Let's hope Tom has an extended honeymoon into the North London Derby and Arsenal are victorious. I think that will top everything off. But let's hope. Guys, if you've enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave a like and subscribe to the channel as we will be back for more next week. And most importantly, guys, make sure you keep following us down the Arsenal way.